Well, that was exciting.
Are we even backing up now? I don't
know. Yeah, we're backing up.
All right. So we know that the sound quality has been a little iffy because we've been playing around trying to get the backup to work correctly, not overkill, but then it added some stuff to the background, so I don't know. It's a work in progress. Hopefully we won't have to use the backup, and then it won't.
Right.
We won't have a problem.
Hopefully.
Okay, so we just spent some time adjusting the RSS feed, so all the things should be in the correct order. And some of the things that were untitled should be now titled. I'm going to go through and change some of the text in the RSS feed so that it closely matches the show and doesn't have stuff like Podcast Alley or things that are no longer necessary.
It's nostalgia, man. Nostalgia.
I think that there's a lot of news stories that are linked there that probably no longer exist.
Probably.
And a whole bunch of the links to pre and post shows are not valid.
Oh, okay. Still the old URLs, right? Yeah. For the old system. Yeah.
So there's that. But the other stuff is coming along pretty nicely in terms of the website. Still more work to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing the tastings now, and then I should be able to put in at least some preliminary look and feel stuff. So that'll be cool.
Cool.
So how was your week?
It was good. Nice warm week. Shitty today, but...
Yeah, I got cold today.
Well, I guess it was rainy the last couple of days, but the days that were nice were tits, as you would say.
As you would say.
able to spend time outside with the kids is nice, especially after the insanity that we had.
Is Max going back to trucks, or is he still in superhero mode?
He hasn't had too much outside time, so he hasn't gone back to trucks yet. He's still superhero in Star Wars.
He was Batman when I came over.
He was. Yeah, he was up at my sister-in-law's house the other day, and her husband has a lot of superheroes and whatnot, and he was looking at all his Batman stuff, so he's been Batman now.
I don't really have much to talk about. There was this thing that is a science thing, so I don't know if you want to go into that or not.
Sure.
All right. Someone was trying to explain Hawking radiation really poorly on the thing for cosmos. This is an explanation. He said, due to Hawking radiation, someone asked whether black holes evaporate or whatever, when they go away. And this guy says, due to Hawking radiation, yes. Throughout the universe, particles and antiparticles pop into existence and destroy each other. If they do this on an event horizon, one particle falls into the black hole and the other flies out. If the antiparticle falls into the black hole, it destroys a particle in the black hole and the black hole loses mass. Now that's way wrong. But at least the first part of it, it's understandably wrong. The second part of it is ridiculous. The particles pop in and out of existence. That's kind of a hand-wavy thing, in a sense, but I'm not going to get into the details of that because it works for the explanation. But the part about how one particle falls in and one falls out, and if it's the antiparticle, then it destroys a particle in the black hole, and the black hole loses mass. Let's forget that we don't know what goes on beyond the event horizon in any sense.
Mm-hmm.
If an antiparticle falls in and hits a regular particle inside, let's say inside the black hole, yeah, they would, if the laws of physics are the same, annihilate. But the energy stays inside the black hole, so does the mass. So the mass doesn't go anywhere because of that process. If that were the case.
Well, but the energy stays in the black hole, right?
Right. And energy is mass.
Right. Especially at those kinds of...
Well, E equals MC squared.
Right. But especially at those kinds of extremes, right? They're a lot closer to the conversion point than
I mean, yeah.
than here on the table.
So the black hole doesn't lose any mass if something annihilates inside. And, you know, just it's everything's conserved. So let me try to explain it in a way that kind of takes the first part for granted, but then elucidates more about why it happens. And to make it even more simple, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say these aren't particles that are forming out of nothing. They're to make them easier to think about. Let's consider them basketballs, right? So throughout the universe, basketballs, anti-basketballs are being formed. They form and they collide and they essentially, so energy is conserved. Mm-hmm. So it happens in such a small period of time, lower than Planck time, that essentially nothing, you can't detect it, but these are happening constantly. A basketball, anti-basketball come into existence, hit each other, go out of existence. Mm-hmm. So this is happening everywhere. So if this happens at the event horizon of a black hole, or let me put it this way. If this happens in a place where there's a lot of energy, let's say in a large magnetic field, there's the possibility that these basketballs that have just popped into existence can be actually endowed with enough energy so that they turn not into virtual particles, but into regular basketballs, not virtual basketballs. So then you're in a magnetic field. One goes one way, the other goes the other way. You have just taken some energy from that electromagnetic field and turned it into these particles. So these particles stop being these basketballs become real. So let's say that happens at the event horizon of a black hole. The event horizon is an area of a lot of energy, gravitational energy. That energy can boost these particles, these basketballs, into being real, right? So let's say that happens and one goes in to the black hole and one escapes. When it was the electromagnetic thing, remember, it took energy from the electromagnetic field to turn these particles real. To turn those two particles or basketballs real at the black hole, it takes energy from the black hole. Now, one of them falls in, one of them goes out, but half of that energy escaped. And that's what's happening. That's what's happening. The energy is being released because the black hole is allowing these particles to be created, and then one of them escapes, and so it slowly winnows down the energy of the black hole.
That's
a better explanation. It's not entirely accurate, but it's accurate enough for...
I don't think basketballs helped.
No.
At all.
When I was thinking about it, when I was thinking about how to do it, the basketball thing seemed like a good way, but then I just got confused because I kept saying particles instead of basketballs.
But there was nothing that helped make it more... At least for me, there was no part of the story where I needed to visualize a basketball instead of a particle.
Yeah, the thing was, because I look at particles differently than you look at particles. So, I mean, to me, particles are not little round things. They're waves in a field, so...
No, to me, they're just little dumb little round things. I see how you are, asshole.
I'm not trying to be an asshole. I'm just trying to elucidate why. Anyway, you can think of the particles as basketballs if you want, if that makes them easier for you to understand. That's not, like I said, it's not entirely accurate, but it's a lot closer to than what that guy said.
Okay. So, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So that's Hawking radiation. I can get rid of that one. There's a discovery of a new dwarf planet on the outer edge of the solar system.
How big?
Bigger than Pluto.
Okay.
And considerably further away, I believe. It extends the outer solar system a lot further than we thought it did. About the size of Eris, I think, they thought. There's also discovered one of the first asteroids with rings.
Nice.
Yeah. So apparently, had a collision recently, and so there's a ring system around it. That's pretty cool. Probably isn't stable. But all right.
Cool. All right.
Game of Thrones this weekend.
Oh yeah. Nice.
So the new season. The So this the new season is the second half of the third book. The third book is generally considered by everyone who is fans of the series the best book in the series. So it sort of picks up right where the last season left off. Major events are going to continue to happen.
Okay.
In fact, there is, I believe, a considerably major event that happens, from what I understand, episode 2. So right away.
Okay, cool. I'll have to, you know, I'm going to have to watch the end of the last season was that big slaughter, right?
The Red Wedding, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was, that changed things a little bit.
No.
things that didn't make the cut. Let's see, what do I have to contribute to this show? Windows XP's getting its last support update.
Yeah, which, you know, matters for you since you actually do have a Windows XP machine.
There's a lot of people that have Windows XP machines. Mine I don't use very often. That's why it's still Windows XP. But it'll be interesting because there's a couple things going on here. The security researchers are projecting that the bad guys are holding back a whole bunch of zero-day exploits.
Oh.
So they're not seen in the wild before Microsoft stops patching things. So, like, the day after the last patch comes out, you might see hundreds of new exploits. Hundreds might sound hyperbolic or not. I don't know. But, I mean, it depends on what's being held back, right? Mm-hmm. Because why would you, if you found a grade zero day that exploited XP, why would you launch it, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago when you can launch it, you know, next week and it'll never, ever get patched?
True.
So that's kind of an interesting thing. What's the other thing I was going to say? There's still a lot of people using XP. It's been, I can't believe it's been 13 years since XP was launched.
Yeah.
It's 2001.
Wow.
Not, I mean, it's older than Craft Beer Radio, but not by much.
You know, I'd say Windows 7 is a great operating system. So, you know, upgrade to that, you'll be fine, and it you won't skip a beat. Windows 8, I understand it's going through some changes, and 8.1 is supposed to be a lot better.
Okay.
But I haven't even touched Windows 8, so I don't know for sure.
I haven't touched it either.
Obviously, we do a lot of work on our Macs, so that's neither here nor there for us.
Yeah, every once in a while you need a Windows machine to do something, though. What was the other thing I was going to say about Windows XP's end of support? If you're using XP, you probably should consider upgrading. If you're a very careful internet user, you can probably be safe if you know don't do dangerous things online. Like, don't use Internet Explorer, run NoScript in your Firefox browser, and for God's sakes, don't download porn.
But there's always exploits coming around for things like, even things like JPEGs and...
Yeah, well, yeah, don't read emails on it.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, if you need it for some reason, you know, you just lock it down and use
don't connect
it
to the internet.
Use it just for that reason. Yeah, was, it's...
put it behind a NAT, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of a given.
Yeah.
Most people can't even put a computer on the internet these days, right, because the routers come with NAT baked in. So I had one other point I wanted to make, but it's not coming back to me, so we'll just move on to something else.
Can't really think of much because
I've been doing some work with you know, we're moving towards using Google Apps for Business at work, and we're getting pretty close to launching that. And but I've been doing some work with some of the APIs, you know, for Google has. Google has APIs for everything.
Yeah.
And it's really quite amazing because it's not just Gmail and Docs, you know, it's you gotta think of this thing as a whole cloud platform, right? And you know, there's APIs to do all, like, just about anything, from the simple things, like if you want a filter that does something that the built-in filtering doesn't do, you can write that pretty trivially. Like, I have a script that deletes all of, so for my work email, I have a folder that gets a whole bunch of automated email from systems and things like that, right? And it's not stuff you need to read all the time. You just kind of want to browse it every once in a while. Or if there's a problem, you want to go back and read it type thing. But, you know, there's hundreds of emails a week coming to this thing. So Google really doesn't have a way to say delete emails that are older than a month or anything like that, right? So you just have this huge mailbox and you have to go through and, you know, either clean it up or just let it get huge. But you can write a Google App script with, like, less than 10 lines of code, right, to go into your mailbox and delete from a specified folder any emails older than 10 days that aren't starred, you know. And you can just have it go clean up your, you know, do things like that. And that's less than 10 lines of code to do that kind of thing. Their APIs for Google's App Script, which is the easier of the two, right? That just runs right in the browser. It's all JavaScript. The APIs are well documented. It's really easy to pick up and do stuff with. And then to ease our migration, I'm doing some things with their Python API to migrate some mailing list archives and stuff like that. And that's that's not as easy. That's not 10 lines of code. But their APIs, I mean, for the work I'm getting done, it's like, wow, I can't believe I'm doing all this with just this little bit of code. It's,
you
really
know, Python?
Cool. Yeah.
So Bluehost does Python, I believe.
Depends. They don't, well, yeah, I think they do Python. Like if you want to use like Django, which is like the CMS for Python, like the most popular Python CMS, you can't really run Django on Bluehost.
No, but my question is, can you create database lookup? Can you do simple database lookups and retrieve data retrieval through Python? Do you know how to do that?
Do I know? I could with a manual. I'm still, for that kind of work, I'm still much more fluent in PHP than I am in Python.
It does PHP too.
Right.
Bluehost is, so if you can do that in PHP, then we can easily translate the stuff I'm making, because I'm trying not to try to put all the logic in JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
So then we can really easily do it. I don't even have to dip my balls into PHP to get it to work.
PHP's, I mean, it's constructs is a lot like, I haven't used ASP.NET, but I mean, it's definitely like classic ASP, right? Yeah. The way it works. It's kind of like the construct of ASP, but with the syntax of Perl. Right. So the syntax isn't necessarily the VB script type stuff that you're used to. It's not Perl, but it's a lot more like Perl.
All you gotta do is open a connection, send this query, retrieve the data, format it in a particular way, and send it back. That's it. That's all I'm requiring. And that should be relatively simple, right?
Yeah, it should be.
And the rest of it will be handled CSS and AJAX and stuff like that. Cool.
Okay.
All right. So that's good to know, because right now I'm just doing it in ASP and a lot of data retrieval and sending.
Yeah, but the Google stuff is it's really powerful. Like, it's almost exciting for, I mean, we've got a bunch of engineers at work, right? So these guys, once they're aware of what's possible, you know, whenever they have an itch, you know, it's really exciting, the promise of, you know, what just switching our email service is going to get us in the long run, you know, or could potentially get us in the long run.
So what does that mean for things like Microsoft Word? I mean, things like that we used to rely on as, and Excel, these things we used to rely on as sort of the steady underlying business applications that everyone used. When you have now available to anybody free versions of those with essentially all the tools that they all had.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean for Microsoft's major big office business and for, you know, people in computing going forward?
Well, Microsoft has inertia. I mean, even with us doing this stuff, there's going to be anyone who faces customers is going to still have a Microsoft Office suite just for compatibility's sake. I mean, the files are, you can open the files and display the files in Google or in OpenOffice, but you can't really guarantee the display is going to be the same, mm-hmm. right? That you're not going to have some goofy formatting glitch. And since there's inertia, even for I'll still call them early adopters, right? Even for the early adopters that are saying, hey, we're just going to use Google Docs for our office for the whole company, right? And so even for those early adopters, there's, it's going to be a tough call, especially if you, like, if you care, you know, you want to email this PowerPoint presentation to someone to see, and you want to make sure it's not screwed up, right? You can't really trust to make a slides presentation in Google Docs and export it as a PPT and send it off and know that it's going to be right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's that thing. I mean, Microsoft's going cloud Office Suite, right? Slowly but surely, right? They're next major.
But they still want people to pay for it.
But the price, well, sure. It's very disruptive for them, right? Because they're not going to be able to charge the same price going forward. I mean, they've already figured that out with Windows 8, right? Mm-hmm. The price of Windows 8 is much lower than Windows 7. I don't know what it means for their business, the way they're structured, right? I mean, it just seems like it's going to hurt. I mean, to be competitive, you got to sell your operating system, which you used to sell for $200 for, what, $35, $40, yeah. Something like that. Yeah, I don't know. And like, they're for the longest time, I haven't looked lately. I don't care. Don't give two shits about Microsoft anymore. But, you know, one of their largest revenue streams was Office, right? It was more than Windows, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And well, most of the Windows is OEMs, right? So that's a pretty big loss leader. So maybe lowering their price, you know, the retail price of Windows really didn't change their bottom line all that much, right? Because of all the OEM pricing that they were giving.
Right.
Who buys full copy of Windows? You know, what percentage of Windows users have ever purchased a retail copy of Windows, right? Yeah, the Office thing. I don't know how it's going to shake out. Like I said, I haven't really looked. I know that they just did the iPad Office, right? That just came out. And I remember seeing something about, you know, Office 2015 or something being, you know, a lot more cloud-based, right? Probably all on Azure, that kind of thing. Probably browser-based. I don't know. We'll see.
You mentioned inertia. I want to ask another science question of you.
Okay.
So, we know from Galileo's time why that two objects, particularly in a vacuum, but, you know, if they're the same shape, then it should work out the same. Two objects that are different weights fall at the same speed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why? It's a cool little...
Right, because acceleration due to gravity is not dependent on... Why isn't it dependent on mass? You figure more mass, the more it would pull.
Mm-hmm.
So why isn't it dependent on mass? What do you got for me?
Well, it's interesting because it just so happens that... okay. How can I put this? The object with more mass is attracted to the Earth more, right? Than mm-hmm. the object with less mass.
Mm-hmm.
However, the object with more mass has more inertia. And that needs to be overcome more. And it just so happens that these mm-hmm. exactly cancel out.
Okay, right. I've heard that before now that you mention it. And it's just a coincidence, I guess.
Yeah, it just happens to be the case that these values cancel each other out.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Even.
I think that there is probably you could probably find, if you were to do a really, 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 really intense study, that there might be a slight deviation.
Right.
Particularly since you have, in reality, what's happening is not that the objects are falling to the Earth. It's that the Earth and the object are both attracting each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, just one's a lot bigger. A lot mm-hmm. bigger.
Right. Cool.
Yeah.
I remember hearing that before, but you know, when you just put it in my head, like, hey, wait a second. I for some reason, even though you even gave me the tip with speaking of inertia, I wasn't thinking of inertia, because when you're just thinking about inertia as a layman, right, you're only thinking about the amount of force needed to break the object. You don't to stop the object. You don't think about the amount of force needed to start the object as inertia, right? Because that's layman's terms. That's not inertia. It's just the pressure when you're trying to stop.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
but it's just a cool little thing that, it's one of those fun mm-hmm. things that it's fun to know.
Right.
And we can go on to the show, and I can ask you a few more questions later. Not science stuff.